welcome. It's your weekend Managing Madrid podcast. It's your host, Gabe Lesra, and I am joined by Kian Sobhany. Kian, welcome to the show. Good to talk.
Thank you. Glad to be able to, you know, actually record with you and not separately. It's nice. Yeah, I was listening to your podcast, which was excellent, by the way, the FFP PSG stuff, which everyone should listen to. But I was driving in the car listening, and I was like, you know what? I wish I was just there. But then I realized I would have had nothing to contribute to the discussion because you killed it. It was amazing.
Thank you. If you're a patron, you go check that out. If you want to, I did about 20 minute rant about FFP, trying to explain what's going on and why this rumor that Phil Schoen today during the broadcast for Real Madrid game talked about how Madrid might try to go get Mbappe and why that's unlikely. Also, Omar Vind, what's up? Did you get your head out of that rubbish bin?
yeah, I'm safe and sound from my Twitter battles today. It was tougher than usual. Got a couple scratches, bruises, but I'm safe and sound to do the podcast with you two today.
Well, read us the tweet. Don't leave everybody hanging. We want to know the context.
All right. So the first goal came from a penalty, right? And like Asensio was the one who drew it. So I thought it was slightly fortuitous because I think Asensio embellished a little bit of contact. And so I tweeted out, Asensio definitely dived, LOL, or something like that, to that effect. And the guy replies with, find a rubbish bin, put your head in, and come back after the game. You don't need to watch the game. No one is forcing you. So a totally normal reaction, right? That was interesting. After that, I tweeted a lot of positive things about Asensio, because especially in the second half, he played really well. And the guy just kept replying to me like, oh, but he's a diver, right? Not up to your standards or something like that. It was interesting, to say the least. And this is one of the reasons I love Twitter, social media so much. Like, without these wonderful platforms, I will not have interactions like these on a daily basis.
Yeah, I just want to shout out to all the awesome people who appear to be having very normal ones. I also, you know, in my own Twitter today, I just want to shout out the various people who tweeted Benzema can't score a goal at me. Thank you. You guys made my day.
Shout out
to that guy if he's listening. You know, King, come back.
Did you guys know a rubbish bin is a real thing? Like, I thought he was just talking about a trash can that was rubbish, but it's, if you Google rubbish bin, it's a specific kind of bin.
No way. It's a specific kind of bin.
Yeah, it's a taller bin. So that's why he wanted you to stick your head in that one.
So, Keon, what you're telling me is there was a lot more thought to this reply than I was giving credit for.
He may be more intelligent than we're giving him credit for, yes.
Well, that guy's, you know, crushing it as usual. So we're here to talk about Real Madrid's big win. I know I said big win last week and people were upset about it. Well, this one is definitely a big win. 4-1 against Girona. Girona playing a very good first half, I thought, guys.
Yeah, I think Matt Wiltsy on Twitter said this is a game that we would have lost last season. I think he might have been right. I think the response in the second half was great. And kind of like the 4-2-3-1 is such a formation we've always talked about in the past in this podcast, how we all love it. But this is also why I always say that it's not so much about formation, it's about scheme. Because if you roll out a 4-2-3-1 and your double pivot is overwhelmed defensively in transition, it's just going to be difficult. And if all the pieces aren't in the right places. And then the second half, at halftime, Lopetegui just makes subtle adjustments. I don't know. There wasn't like a huge schematic shift, but just little things like Asensio and Isco helping defensively while both of them actually playing more efficient with the ball changed everything to me. And Girona from that point, after a great first half where Porto, Granel and Lozano all were great and dangerous, especially Porto on that right flank, just burning Marcelo a few times defensively. But Once we kind of just got our act together, we're a bit better on both ends of the field. The Girona's momentum just got sucked out of them. If you look at the XG in this game, it's insane. Four expected goals, and the chart just escalates so quickly in the second half once we start piling on the goals. The second half was great. It was a really good performance overall.
Yeah, very good performance. I mean, obviously, it's buttressed by two penalties. The second one I thought was extremely just a terribly dumb challenge. So that was that one I think we can comfortably take to the bank as certainly a penalty. There were, you know, a couple little chippy things in the area, but it did seem like Madrid's changes at halftime really sucked the wind out of Girona's sails. And we, in fact, Real Madrid did lose last time they were at Girona last season. This is a tough, place to play, guys, because in addition to it being a very hostile group of fans, right? They hate Real Madrid there. It's also one of the smaller, literally smaller pitches in Spain. It's a small pitch, and it reminds me a lot of I think Rayo Vallecano used to have a pitch that was also pretty small, and it allows teams to really shut down lines and occupy more percentage and more space on the pitch to make it harder to break through. And that was, to me, that made it even more impressive that when Madrid actually did break through and find, you know, throughout that second half, more of those line breaking passes and actually, you know, control the ball closer and closer to Girona's net.
What did you see? Cause I'm curious to know what your thoughts were on this.
Yeah. I think both your points generally are spot on. And I think to Gabe pointing out about how essentially the playing away to Girona and how they play, like it's difficult for opposing teams. And I think there was a lot of talk beforehand about how Girona are a different side because they obviously have a new manager. Pablo Machin has gone on to manage Sevilla, did a brilliant job with Girona. Now you have Eusebio Sacristán as the new Girona manager. And there was a lot of talk about Sacristán being more offensive and this was going to be a different Girona this season. I think that's true, but the Girona we saw today was very similar to the Girona we saw that beat us last time when we played away last season, essentially because of the fact that both times they pressed very high and they effectively suffocated our buildup. And I think that was really the theme of the first half, and it was something that we just couldn't figure out. And it was quite a problem. There are several reasons for that. One, I think we just didn't look that sharp on the ball. I mean, that sometimes it's as simple as that, and I think that was a large part of it. Isco, a lot of bad giveaways in the first half. Asensio wasn't looking too great. And then it was also the fact that you have to give credit to the opposition. Girona pressed very, very well, especially in that first half. It was a 4-4-2, very concentrated towards the ball side, so Real Madrid would build down the wing, usually down the right wing in that first half, especially the first like 15-20 minutes, and Girona would concentrate most of the players that side, and they'd have the winger who would be kind of near the center of the pitch ready to sprint over to the other side when we switched play. So it was all very well done. They had numbers close to the area where they wanted to press. They had access to key spaces on the pitch, and they were disciplined enough to shift from side to side, and that was quite impressive to see. There was that, and then also I think just speaking to Keon's point about formations, etc., and scheme, I think we struggled with a Casemiro Kroos double pivot to advance against that press because Isco was the only one between the lines, and I think we had, because in a 4-3-3 usually you have two central midfielders that are pushed higher up the pitch. And that one gives you more options between the lines. And especially for the Getafe game, it essentially pinned Getafe's midfield block towards the center and allowed us to switch play more easily. This game, it was really only Isco there. And the objective very quickly became for Isco to shift from flank to flank. If you look at his heat map, he took very few touches in the center. We're all on the flanks. The objective was to use Isco on each flank to build up down the wing. And that already is tougher than I think what we did against Getafe, but it's still possible.
Yeah.
Except we just weren't playing, you know, that sharp. No one looked that great in the first half, and we struggled a lot. It took a perhaps fortuitous penalty to get us back in the game. And then after that, you know, we just kind of ran away with it. There were several key transitions where I thought Girona would counter-press us. sort of win the ball, but then we do enough to win the 50-50 challenge, and then Gareth Bale and Karim Benzema were away on the counterattack, and then we just quickly, you know, gave them, you know, it was almost like a double whammy with us, with their attack failing and then us scoring off of that. Like, it just killed them. And then very quickly when it became 3-1, the game was over. And I that was impressive, but there's definitely work to do. But I think we need to win games like this. It can't always be perfect because it's going to take time for Lopetegui's philosophy to set in.
And I think that the change at halftime speaks to Lopetegui's, I think, I mean, it seemed to speak to Lopetegui's ability to, you know, instill in a level of confidence in the players that they're going to get back into this game and make tactical and you know, man management adjustments sort of on the fly like that. I was impressed. It's weird and tough to have a team show two completely different faces in one game, and Madrid really did. I mean, I was thinking at you know, in that first half, that this team looked kind of gassed, that they were tired, that they, you know, maybe weren't quite up to speed yet. And I don't think that's what was going on now, you know, but after that first half, I was like, you know, thinking these players, a lot of whom played in the World Cup, must really just not be rested and not really be prepared to do this. Because, I mean, I think Casemiro especially, who, and we can talk about him now if you guys are interested. I mean, like, he especially, I thought, had quite a bad game in doing the stuff that he normally does. He was he just didn't seem, I mean, he was overrun defensively in that first half. And then when Madrid had the ball, it seemed clear that Girona wanted to trigger that press by just smashing in and going after Casemiro whenever he had the ball deep. It showed off his the only main weakness in his game, which is doing exactly what Madrid needed him to do, which is hang on to the ball and progress the ball between the lines and move it out of defense, basically. That was a big weak point, I think, for Madrid, even in the second half.
I would like to talk about Casemiro because I think it touches on a lot of other tactical things that I didn't mention. I was mainly talking about Real Madrid in possession, so that's one part of it that I'll get back to. But quickly, let me just talk about the counter-press and Casemiro getting overwhelmed on defensive transition. So that was another thing that today I was disappointed not to see. And really, I'm talking about the first half, because the second half, the counter-press came back, and I think that was the main change Lopetegui made. Yeah. And I don't know if it was a schematic reason for why it wasn't there in the first half, but I just think Asensio and Isco just weren't that interested in putting in the defensive shift that they needed to. And also, again, with the inverted, or not the inverted, sorry, the V shape that you get in a 4-3-3 with the midfield gives you two central midfielders to guard the half spaces because when you counter press, you set it all up in possession. So you create your structure so that when you lose the ball, you can immediately collapse towards an area that you need to. You don't set up in defense after you lose the ball, because that's how you get cut apart. And that was an issue we had under Zidane last season. And I think the thing was is that because we had Kroos and Casemiro generally so deep, it was mainly Isco trying to guard all those spaces, and someone else needed to kind of come inwards and help him. And Asensio was the guy who did that in the second half, and that helped a lot. But I think that's why Casemiro looked like he was overrun. There was also the issue that Keon tweeted out on the goal. I think it was Kroos was jogging again. I mean, this is like his major weakness. Like, he just can't be bothered to track back in transition. And it's one of the biggest reasons I say I don't want him as a single pivot defensive midfielder long term, even though he brings so many fantastic qualities there. And then back to Casemiro in possession. I mean, thus far, I'm seeing a disconnect between what Lopetegui wants in his midfield and Casemiro's role within that side. I'm not willing to write him off, because Modric hasn't come back yet, and the midfield is going to be Casemiro, Kroos, Modric. But right now, Casemiro is struggling. Like, he's not progressing the ball in an effective manner. Today, he was trying to drop in between the center backs whenever we were taking goal kicks, and I didn't see a single time where Navas fed him the ball. And in the second half, Kroos was coming like to the right-hand side of the box when Casemiro dropped deep, and Navas was just more interested in passing it off to Kroos instead. Like, this idea that Casemiro doesn't play that significant a role in distribution is vulnerable with some of the passes and touches he makes under pressure, which we saw this game. it's been borne out. We've seen this over time now, and Lopetegui has to figure out how he wants this whole thing to work, and I just don't think that it's happened yet. Obviously, he needs more time. It'll probably look different when Modric and Kroos are both there to take up distribution duties on either side, but at the moment, that to me is the main issue that needs to be solved.
Yeah. Kian, what do you think about this? I mean, I just want to everyone who's listening, just, I know that a lot of there's this kind of narrative about us that we have this weird anti-Casemiro feeling or bias or agenda that we're pushing. Just FYI, we're not pushing agendas. We don't have any amount of, like, we don't have any clout. It doesn't matter if we have an agenda. We can't execute our agenda. That's insane. So
speak
don't
for have yourself. Put your head in a rubbish bin.
All right, Kian. Well, what's your agenda then?
Well, I don't know where to start. There's just a lot of great discussion going on right now, and I guess on topic Casemiro, it would be interesting if you just put him in the Getafe game, and you wouldn't see any of this stuff because of just the manner of the way Getafe didn't really press that well. They were kind of in a deeper block. They were more organized, trying to cut off passing lanes in the middle. And also Real Madrid just like an otherworldly amount of possession in that game. You know, they had a lot of the ball in this game too, but in this particular game, I think Ohm kind of mentioned already why he suffered, but also just there were at least three occasions in my notes where he just gave the ball away in a terribly dangerous area. And I felt like I wish just for those moments we had a timeout option where we could just be like, hold on, Casemiro has the ball, timeout. Run it back. Like, let's just, can we get a throw in? Can we replace him with somebody for 1 second? It really felt like he was uncomfortable. And Girona really, like, throughout the game, especially in the first half, but, you know, sporadically in the second half, were very efficient in their pressing. I thought, you know, as collectively, we gave the ball away several times, but Casemiro also looked quite uncomfortable. And, you know, like, some of the stuff really is not on him. Like, you know, if you look at the first goal we conceded, well, the only goal we conceded, Casemiro really, like, he's just kind of like, you feel bad for him because he's spread so thin. He's covering two positions, whereas Kroos really should have prevented that goal by jogging back. He should have sprinted back, and he had a lot of time to close down Borja Garcia and prevent that goal. But also, like, you look at the entire, like, collective shape of the team and where is everybody really, and part of the reason why Casemiro also struggled to find outlets is because I felt like there was a bit of a disconnect where the front four really seemed like to emphasize just trying to play off the shoulder of the defensive line and act as an outlet, and it looked fine and it was kind of fun because you saw Asensio, Bale and Benzema at times, like two of them playing off the shoulder of the defensive line, one of them dropping in behind the lines and kind of just rotating, and it looked kind of cool. But defensively, none of those four, and even Isco, who you would consider maybe as a third central midfielder, just based on past precedents, was even higher up than Asensio. And so that really made it difficult to defend counterattacks. Again, like a lot of that was just like simple tweaks. They both of them, both Isco and Asensio, defended better in the second half, and
yeah,
it looked way better. But I think it will be interesting. I really wonder what happens when Modric comes back, because it's hard for me to see Isco sacrifice, or sorry, Lopetegui to sacrifice Isco. And we've seen Kroos put in a masterclass against Getafe as the anchor. Now, you know, the caveat is like there are going to be teams who will not be Getafe, who will try to make that uncomfortable. I am also interested to see what happens to Casemiro.
What I think is going to happen, at least in the immediate future, is Isco is going to go to the left wing, and Casemiro stays. I mean,
there's one someone you have to drop from the front three then.
Yeah, it would probably be Asensio. I think we have to also explain why we're saying that, like, this is something Lopetegui needs to figure out, because it's not just because we've been saying about Casemiro with his distribution, the pressure. We've been saying that for a long time, and we won three Champions Leagues in a row with him as the main defensive midfielder. So I think the people listening deserve, like, to understand what is the distinction we're making here with Lopetegui. And I think with Zidane, what, at least I'll just speak for myself here, what I was saying was that, yes, it was problematic, but it was not problematic, like, to the entirety of the scheme. Like, there were positives and negatives, and the positives outweighed the negatives, and that Casemiro needed to be there, and Zidane's scheme was fine for it. Like, it's just that the way Zidane incorporated him, Zidane's scheme with him, had negatives, but it was part of Zidane's scheme. So
right. What
we essentially had was Kroos and Modric dropping deep, Casemiro being this weird pseudo number 10, and it made it difficult to build through the middle. We'd figure out ways through the flanks. Kroos and Modric would work their magic, and we'd find our way to the final third, and we'd cross, and we'd attack that way. And there were weaknesses there, but we always got over it, and Zidane was completely fine. Like, his scheme was always very fluid, very adjustable. This was how he played. He didn't always need the greatest amount of structure in his possession. He's not a positional play coach. And then there was the issue about, like, him under pressure. But again, Zidane would simply avoid that, right, by moving kind of Casemiro up the pitch. The reason this is an issue with Lopetegui, and one that he really needs to solve, is because Lopetegui plays in a different way than Zidane. Lopetegui is not going to be content with Kroos and Modric dropping really deep and Casemiro floating as this weird pseudo number 10. Like, that's not how Lopetegui likes to structure his teams in possession. If he's going to play a three-man midfield with a V-shape, Casemiro is going to have to be the deeper player, or if he's going to be an advanced player, he's going to have to play his role as an interior on one side of the pitch, kind of like how Conte is adjusting himself under Maurizio Sarri with Chelsea. Yeah. And he is going to have to be involved in possession, maybe not as much as Kroos and Modric, but he's going to have to play his role because Lopetegui just doesn't want to, like, hide one side of the field. He plays through all areas of the pitch. It's all neatly structured. And if it's fluid, there's interchange of position, but the structure changes the same. And under Porto, he utilized Casemiro often in a double pivot, more box to box. And that's kind of what he was trying here versus Girona. So that's why I'm saying it. This is why I'm saying, like, it's really key he figures it out. It's not simply a case like a Zidane, you know, just putting him there and watching as his midfield did that. Lopetegui is a different kind of coach. He's more tactical. He wants things more structured. And that's why there's a difference here. And that's why I think it could potentially affect this team more, which is why I say it's something that needs to be figured out. And I mean, I don't have the answers. I can't tell you it's going to fail. I can't tell you it's going to succeed. I can just tell you at the moment I see some issues that we'll see how it works out.
Well, it's right. One of those things that with Zidane, his way of masking Casemiro's weakness in that role with the ball was to send him forward and get Modric and Kroos to kind of hedge back, right? And obviously that even had deeper repercussions, like especially in La Liga last season, where Modric and Kroos also sometimes weren't even in position either. All three of them were high up the pitch. So, like, the chaos that ensued in the defensive dominoes were dramatic. Whereas with Lopetegui, like, this is what he wants to do, and you can either play that role or you can't. So can Casemiro essentially play that role? Because they're not going to start sending him up the field, and you can look at his heat map to confirm that today too, because he was the anchor, and, like, that's the role he's going to have to play. And can he play it? I don't know.
And, you know, fundamentally, I think what's part of the issue that's going on right now is it's pretty early days still, and I feel like Casemiro he doesn't really have the pace. He does not really up to pace right now. Like, there's a level of decision making and stamina and just, you know, thought process that you have to have at a very, very high level to appropriately guide the ball out of a press. And he hasn't played in a while. He didn't play, he needs to have everything in his mind firing and thinking about that and making, you know, instinct level decisions that it takes some time to build up. And he's working on, you know, getting this aspect of his game. Obviously it's not there yet, obviously, but I also don't think I think it's quite a bit too early to write him off as this role. Or, I mean, I agree that there are definitely some concerns about it, but and there are concerns that we've had for a long time, you know, with his style of play. But I also think that I believe that he has it in him to fix this issue and to get himself, you know, into a level where he can move the ball out of and move the ball around effectively without us feeling, like you said, Keon, that we need to take a timeout whenever he gets the ball.
Yeah, and I don't want to like spend too much time on this point. But amazingly, I just forgot what I was going to say, so I guess we're just going to move on.
All right, let's just move on then. So this, I think that moving from defense, I don't have that much to say. I thought, much like Casemiro.
Oh, I just remembered it.
All right, go shoot, dude.
Okay, so apologies for that, guys, but the reason, because like then I guess people would ask, and a lot of people have been asking me, why can't Lopetegui just dump Casemiro to the bench, right, and just play Kroos or Llorente there, or whatever, and there's a reason that Lopetegui is trying all these schemes to fit Casemiro. He's not just doing it for the sake of doing it. He's the coach. He can bench whoever he wants. I mean, the only unbenchable player probably was Ronaldo, and he's gone now. He's doing it because, and again, like when we make these comments about Casemiro, people tend to pretend like we don't see his positives. The reason he's doing this is for a very logical reason. It's that Casemiro is by far the best defensive player on the squad, and he provides a level of defensive insurance that N'Golo Kante is the only other guy that provides like an equal amount. And that is saying something. So like these guys are the two best defensive midfielders around on the defensive side of things. And Casemiro, certainly, like I said many times before, when Brazil played Belgium in the World Cup and they got knocked out, I thought if Casemiro started that game, Brazil went through because they were open in transition. The structure wasn't great. And in times like that, when the team isn't clicking defensively and the tactics just aren't quite right, Casemiro will save you. So that's why Lopetegui is trying to figure it out. We're not saying Casemiro doesn't offer anything, because if he didn't offer anything, Lopetegui wouldn't spend this much time with him trying to figure out what is the best way to utilize him in the way that I want to play. He's trying to figure it out because if it works out, Casemiro is going to provide an amazing level of defensive insurance, and he's going to protect against any mistakes that we make. I think maybe even Casemiro, like you said, Gabe, Casemiro wasn't up to pace yet because of the World Cup, blah, blah, blah. If Casemiro was up to pace, maybe he even stops that goal where Kroos was jogging back. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the reason. Like, I think we're making a nuanced argument here about many things. And I just ask you to keep that in mind and at least be open-minded about what we're saying, because I understand why it gets emotional, because this guy is a fantastic player and he has a cult following for a reason. And it's because he's provided Real Madrid with a level of defensive stability we haven't had in a long time.
Or instead of any of that, you can just go on in the comments on this and just talk about how much we hate the team and why, like the guy tells us to go throw ourselves in a rubbish bin or whatever. I wanted to talk also about the change in the way the offense executed from one half to the other, because in the first half there were definitely a lot of, you know, moments that Madrid could have scored, but what it felt like was that the offense was sort of sluggish and moving like they were in almost in some sort of water or something. They were just hard. Felt like everything was laborious. And in the second half, it felt like from the get-go, everything was quick, everything was sharp, and all the players were receiving passes, looking upfield, making moves, 1-2 touch passing. It felt a lot better. So I'm just interested, do you guys feel like there was any obvious tactical shift, or was this more of a Lopetegui's own kind of just man management, convincing people to play harder?
I think it was very simple things. So, for example, we didn't, like, a lot of them were also just dominoes of better defensive decisions. We didn't really see a good high press until the second half. And as soon as we started doing it, Girona started to cough up possession. That led to better chances. doing better work defensively meant catching Girona on the break and getting just better opportunities, higher percentage opportunities on the counterattack. Marcelo, who to me, him and Bale were the two in the first half when the team couldn't really create, were the two trying to do things and actually were able to create just based on three key passes. I think Marcelo had two, Bale had three in the first half, or maybe it was two apiece. But also Marcelo's crossing from the left, as bad as he was defensively, his crossing from the left was really dangerous and almost always accurate and well-weighted. Bale's low crosses always dangerous. And both of them, they continue to do that in the second half. And Asensio, to me, and one of the things that he did differently in the second half was, instead of kind of playing that simple pass, which seems counterintuitive to think this way, but it really, really helped. He would just dribble through like two or three players and break Girona's line completely. So that kind of ingenuity is the stuff you need to kind of get yourself going. And I think a lot of that was just picked up from the better work defensively, which had a ton of dominoes. And, you know, I noted that Bale and Benzema both made the same run a couple times in the first half, where one of them could have dragged the defense a bit and spread it a bit. And they did that better in the second half. And again, I think that, in addition to the early penalty in the second half, kind of just sucked the life out of Girona. And we grew into the game. And it's really, really hard against this Real Madrid team who holds the ball so well in the final third to get yourself, claw yourself back in the game without actually just conceding more. So I think all of that was,
yeah,
was again, little changes, but it made a huge difference.
Yeah, I agree with Keon. I think, I don't think there was a huge schematic change like Keon was saying. And I think there's a danger, I think, like, Not just in this game, I'm speaking like more generally, that when we see results swing like this, we really want to take a lot away from it. Like, there must have been huge, huge reasons. And I mean, I think sometimes that's true, but I think it was pretty simple here. We had a penalty pretty soon in the first half, and then after that, we had a really good counterattack off a Girona defensive breakdown. Isco threads a brilliant through ball into Gareth Bale, 1-1, and game overs. Like, after that, it was it. And if you look at like our expected goals chart, the four big spikes, like we really only had four huge chances, and that was from the four goals, and two were penalties and two were really good. Like, one was a tap in for Benzema, and then the other was a Bale 1-1. So it was just in particular moments in that second half, we got our chance and we took it, and that ended the game. And that's not this, I'm not trying to like put that in a negative light. Like I said earlier in the podcast, that's needed, especially this early when Lopetegui is trying to implement his philosophy. But I personally think that in this game, it was as simple as that, and that's what led to the victory.
We also should note, like, that the third goal, the one that Bale scored, the one, the beautiful Isco through ball.
Oh, yeah.
Kaylor started it. Like, yep. It was.
Oh, yeah.
It was
his distribution has improved massively since,
I mean,
when he
first since
came
the
here.
Preseason, like, his distribution has been incredible. And I wonder how much of that comes into play between him and Courtois. Courtois is clearly an inferior player when it comes to distributing, especially with the ball at his feet, not so much
and
with his hands.
And that is a real thing for Lopetegui. Like, we were discussing stylistic differences between him and Zidane. I don't think Zidane would have cared about that much. But Lopetegui wants that. Like, most positional play coaches, like, Sarri didn't want to send Courtois away, but he accepted that it was an inevitability, and look who he went and signed. He signed Kepa, one of the best keepers in La Liga over the past couple of seasons, with the ball at his feet. Like, this is something that these types of coaches want. They really value. Pep signing Ederson has shown that it can really make a huge, huge impact. Liverpool has then went for Alisson. Remember, Klopp is also a positional play coach, even though he approaches it in a different way. This is not just like just Courtois on the bench, like, just for the hell of it. Like, these little things we're talking about, these things we're emphasizing it because it matters to the coach, and so therefore it matters to the results on the field. And so just keep that in mind when you're looking at this debate. Like, it's not just about shot stopping. It's just not about claiming crosses. The modern goalkeeper has to be able to pass from the ball accurately too, because that is how all these modern talented coaches want to play now.
Having this level of competition also for the spot, it's something that Madrid really hasn't had in a long time. It's very possible that it'll spur both players to get better and improve and, you know, get better at the things that they need to get better at. Like Courtois, for example, like, you know, if I were him, I'd be worried that he's not going to see as much game time because of this. So I would begin really focusing on his distribution and work with the ball at his feet more. And if he could improve that, that'd be a huge for Real Madrid. And then Kaylor, the same basic idea. You just have to keep, you know, focusing on what you can do better. That's what happens when you have players that want to compete with each other for a spot in the team. And it's one of the another reason on top of everything else that I think this is a very good signing. I mean, you know, we saw Andrew Gaffney today said, I don't really understand why Real Madrid went out and got Courtois. GK, you know, keeper wasn't the position that there was the problem with. But I actually do beg to differ with that. I think that the keeper position was a place that Madrid had a problem, not because Kehler is bad or that Kehlers need to be replaced, but because there wasn't someone pushing Kehler to get better and improve. And there was an issue at depth, right? There were a couple times in this match where Kehler came down hard and had me thinking, well, I'm glad we have a really good keeper on the bench who can come in and who I would be happy to start in not just a kind of throwaway match against in the beginning of the season against Girona, but like if Kehler got injured for the rest of the season, like let's say tore his ACL or something, Madrid's in position to have a similarly strong team going forward. So that's I think that's why this is such a strong signing, especially also because of the price. But so yeah, that's sort of where I am on this. We heard a lot of talk in the commentary from Phil and Ray about this, and it was funny because Phil would bring it up and Ray would sort of roll his eyes. You can kind of maybe hear it through the TV and rolling his eyes being like, I don't want to talk about this.
And also because Ray really does not want anyone to take the place of his beloved child Kehler.
It's true. It's beautiful adult son.
Yeah, to people who say Ray Hudson is like biased towards Barcelona or like he's biased against Real Madrid, I have never seen a person defend Isco and Keylor Navas as much as this man.
Marcelo,
he is the biggest fanboy of some of these Real Madrid players of anyone I've ever seen in the world.
He just loves football, man.
He just loves the sport. That's why I love listening to Ray so much, because it's so obvious how much he loves the sport and his love and passion. You can feel it when he's calling games. That's why I really enjoy Ray's commentary. I wish he would commentate every sport that I watch.
He's one of the greats.
Him and Andres Cantor from Telemundo.
The Argentina dude?
Yeah, the guy from the guy who called the guy who called in English some of the World Cup games. Real standout. Huge fan of his.
Yeah.
So I think that it's a little bit ridiculous that we haven't brought him up yet, but this team will thrive and it will ride on the back of its Welsh dragon. Gareth Bale having another fantastic game. Really what is impressive, most impressive to me among many, many other issues, is how consistent it feels like Bale is playing. It seems like he's been freed. And is now free to be the killer that we knew he could be.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about his kind of unchained mental state last podcast, and we're going to talk about it again today and hopefully weekly. Just the fact that he looks confident, he looks fresh, he looks very well equipped to beat people on the flank and put in, like I don't know if someone mentioned this to me. Oh, it was in the mailbag, written mailbag last week, which I did. I don't know if it was a patron question or somebody else, and they said, who scored has one of Bale's crossing as a weakness. And to me, that was like, it's forget who scored or whatever. It's just like his crossing is underrated in football. Like it's been underrated for years now. Like he can whip a cross in with the most, like just so much accuracy, and the weight on the pat on the cross too is like almost perfect. And his low crosses is one of the most dangerous things I've seen in the final third from anyone in football. In that outside of the boot pass, like with his left, is unreal. And he, again, like him and Marcelo were the only two really creating anything offensively in the first half. And then the second half, they just kind of peaked. And Bale in transition like that is devastating to deal with. He also had, the most completed dribbles on the team. This version of Bale is just is fantastic.
I think you were the one that said this is Bale's team now.
Yeah, I mean, he knows it. Everyone else knows it. And that's the key. I mean, this reminds me a lot of 2015-16 Gareth Bale, and just how clinical and just how much of a game changer he is at his best when he's mentally sharp. And when he's in this mindset, when he knows he's the man, when he knows that the success of this team largely rides on his shoulders, he thrives under that. And
that's a great characteristic, to be clear. It's
absolutely
one of those...
This is the guy we need. Like, if there isn't that people on the market, which there really weren't, I mean, you could argue Gonzalo Higuain and stuff, that's another discussion, but there wasn't really that Mbappe type guy, like, on the market that you say comes in and replaces Ronaldo, then you have to look inside your house. And when you're looking at inside your house, there's no better person to replace a character like Cristiano Ronaldo than Gareth Bale. I mean, they're two different type of people, two different type of personalities, but when it comes to shouldering the load, when it comes to taking the responsibility, when it comes to delivering in the clutch, they are very similar players. And we've seen, this is not just this season, the 2015-16 season when Ronaldo was out, you know, towards the end of that La Liga campaign, there was like this three-game period where Bale just put the team on his back and he just carried them and he just won us games out of nowhere. And he's I wouldn't say he quite did that versus Girona, but we are going to see that this season. He was very impressive today, and he knows it. Like, I don't want to call it arrogant and cocky, but you can see a little bit of that in his eyes. And I think cocky Bale, or at least slightly cocky Bale, is the best Bale, because then he just unleashes himself. And I think sometimes Bale can be his own worst enemy, because he feels like sometimes he just needs to sit back and be a passenger. And Keon's talked about this sometimes. Like, I just want Bale to cut inside and just release a shot from range on goal, because that'll just open him up. And I think now that Bale is in that mindset and everyone on the team now sees him as that guy, this is going to be his only mindset. This is going to be the only player he is now. And I'm loving it. If he can stay fit even 75% of the season, our chances of winning a title or a trophy this season are very strong.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also want to say shout out to Karim Benzema, who I got to tell you guys, I think he's looked great. I thought he was really good today. He was what I'm seeing out of him that I didn't see last season, and maybe it's just the confidence issue. But what I was seeing out of him was this belief in his abilities and both the interest and you know, to get to the right spot to take his shots, and to execute passes and to take people on and believe in his own ability is huge. And he was incredible, I thought, tonight. And you know, two goals to boot, well taken penalty. I mean, finishing that you know, perfectly platter made cross from Bale. He's looking like the Karim Benzema from a while back, from when he was that killer that Madrid could count on to score goals and buckets of them. And I think that if Bale and he can play this way, they both have a shot at 20 plus goals this season.
Yeah, I think you know, there are a lot of games where Benzema will play. And a lot of people will find it difficult to know what he did on the pitch, because there are his stat line is a lot of nothing, and he doesn't have any, I guess, goals or assists, and you know, but to us, like, you know, he does a lot of certain things well, and I think this game you could just clearly see he had a good game. And you know, the penalty was really nice, by the way. Like, it was a nice penalty. The positioning for the finish, but also other than that, you know, three key passes. He was constantly moving. Like, he looks sharp to me. I don't know what this means for the season. I'm very cautious to make any predictions because I just have no idea. But I'd say, like, his confidence level, you know, if you measure it alongside Bale, it actually looks quite high. Like, they both look really sharp right now.
They do. That's why I wanted to bring it up, because you know, if Madrid is going to be able to replace the not the actual presence of Ronaldo, obviously, and you know, but just the general statistics, the only way it's going to work is if they can distribute that load throughout the team. And one of the best ways for that to happen is for Benzema to go back to being, in addition to this creative kind of false nine, almost is the way he plays, to go back to also being a goal poaching maniac. You know, one of these people who, I mean, very well taken on the final goal of the game, and very confidently taken penalty. I mean, if he can start converting more, the chances that he was missing last season, or not even getting in position to take, then that is a big weight off of Madrid's shoulders to, like, because at that point, if Benzema can score or create 20 plus goals, I mean, I think that Madrid is looking in a much better position in terms of replacing the output from Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, it's 50 goals, but if suddenly what we're talking about is Benzema, you know, scoring a big chunk of that, then it's a much better look for the rest of the team.
If we can replace Penaldo's 50 goals with 50 goals from Penalmos, I think we'll be, we pretty much
have
it.
Oh my God, yeah. So the last note that I had in my notebook, in addition to saying, in addition to shouting out to Rafa Varane, please come back, King, we need you, because I actually like Nacho on the flank more than I like him in the center. But yeah, in addition to that, I wanted to say, so two penalties, two different penalty kick takers. The first person to take it was Sergio Ramos. And I got to tell you guys, I was nervous watching him walk up there.
Yeah, it's funny, like, no matter how much we all unanimously and universally agree that Sergio Ramos is one of the biggest game players in club history, has an ice in his veins, there's always this, like, uneasiness to when he steps up to it for some reason. But he
converts that one against Bayern back in the day.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess so did Ronaldo in that same shootout. But
also with Spain, I think he's missed a couple.
Maybe. But he always likes those panencas too, like the little chip down the middle. I will say the only thing, I'm okay with him taking it because I guess I have confidence in him taking it to an extent. I like the idea of giving it to Benzema or Bale because I actually really believe in the confidence that it gives those strikers that you'll need for your team just to rack up the goals for them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, if I can just quickly add about Benzema, there's been, I think I've seen this a couple of times, like I received direct messages about, I've seen on Twitter, I've seen in the comments on some articles about how now people want Benzema to essentially just like it's sort of an absurd criticism when I really think about it. It's like this, they're asking like, why is Benzema still dropping deep? Why is he still linking play? He just needs to get in the box and focus on scoring goals. And I guess my retort to that would be, if we're in our own half and we're struggling to break through, do you want Benzema to just be sitting like all the way on the other side of the pitch in the box while the team is trying to build play? I mean, that doesn't really make that much sense. Like Benzema, like helping in like the defensive and middle thirds, helping us progress play, doesn't really affect his ability to score. In fact, in a positional play system, especially under Lopetegui's teams, he loves forwards that get involved. And we saw this game, we were struggling to break through our own defensive third a lot of the time. Benzema was crucial in a lot of moments when he'd just pop off. He'd run away from his center backs, you know, run behind a central midfielder, just pull away into space, provide an outlet, rotate the ball to the other side, and he gets us moving again. That is extremely valuable. Forwards are expected, you know, in possession-based systems, in a team that's going to be as heavy in terms of the passes that we're making, a pass-heavy system. We need Benzema to do these sorts of things. It just doesn't simply disappear just because he needs to score. And it doesn't make sense for us to be, like I said before, like, it's kind of absurd to say that we're trying to build out from the back. Benzema, what he stands in an offside position in the box, doesn't make any sense, right? Like, when we're in the final third, then it's about Benzema making the correct movements and, you know, attacking the box in different angles and connecting with the finish and all of that. But otherwise, his role doesn't actually need to change that much. And I just think that's something that needed to be addressed, because I saw that, like, that was something that was, like, a narrative or, like, this line of thought that was developing. And I see where it's coming from, but, like, when you break it down, I'm not sure it makes that much sense.
I have basically nothing else to add. I owe my meaning to get into that, but I'm glad that we got that out there in terms of that. So I don't have anything else that I specifically wanted to talk about in this match. I did, like I said, wanted to shout out Rafa Varane, man. We miss you. He's so good. Even that little bit of time he was on, everything just felt more calm in Madrid's back line. I know he's not quite up to pace yet, but get there quickly, man. Please. We miss you.
I had a question. That Gareth Bale free kick that he had to retake, was that in?
No, it was almost in.
Okay, because I think Ray had said it like went in or something, and
it was definitely on the line, but I'm pretty sure it didn't go in.
Yeah, they gave us like the angle on the goal line, and like the keeper made pretty good stop.
Okay,
but I mean, so that is, I guess, the last thing before we do questions. I wanted to mention that this is our first, you know, say what you will about other stuff, but you know, Ronaldo did kind of dominate those free kicks. And I think all of us have said for a while that it'd be nice to watch, you know, allow some of the other people who are very good at free kicks to occasionally go for it, you know. And that first shot from Bale reminded me why it's so exciting to have Bale taking the free kicks. He is a very, very gifted free kick taker.
Yeah. I mean, wasn't there a time where if Bale was on the field and if the free kick was in the right, he would take it if Ronaldo was on the field? But then again, that was like not a very occurring sample size because Bale didn't really play much last season. But
yeah, I mean, I think Ronaldo did actually do a decent job of sharing free kicks with Bale. But we Keon said, we didn't see that enough because of the injury, and it's also because Ronaldo didn't really share it with other players. I think Bale was the only one he kind of saw as an equal when it came to taking free kicks. I mean, also like we just didn't take that many direct free kicks as a team over time in the Zidane era, actually. I think in 2017-18, I was like going through like a while back, like, because you have to like individually count this because they don't have like statistics on direct free kicks for whatever reason. I think Ronaldo only took like 13 free kicks in the league. Like that is a very, very small amount compared to what he used to take. Like, I think you go back 3 or 4 seasons, he takes like 50, 60 free kicks. So like that just decreased as a whole, like as we chose to put Kroos in those positions and have him delivered into the box. I don't know if that will change under Lopetegui with, you know, if the ball is like 25, 30 yards out, that Bale will take all of them. But that's just, I think, something interesting to point out, because like in the discussion, I think sometimes that's missed.
I would like to see Kroos take more free kicks as well. Kroos and Isco, I mean, all these guys, there is a wealth of different options for this Real Madrid team. And I would have liked to see when Bale's first free kick was pulled back, I would have liked to see Isco take that one, actually, because Bale went low for the next kick, which is a good idea. Obviously crashed into the wall a little bit, but I would have liked to see Isco take that one because he also another very good free kick taker, folks. Lots of them on Real Madrid.
Yeah,
we have This is where I start missing Hamis.
Yeah. All right. So unless you guys have anything else, I want to just jump into our questions. We don't have that many today, but yeah, we'll talk. You know, take your questions now. Unless Keon, you have anything else from your notebook?
Let's do the questions.
All right. Sheikh Atiri asks us, Phil Schoen mentioned that there are reports of Asensio picking up some bad habits. What is that about? Okay, yeah, I wanted to talk about this also. This is something that I, you know, literally said, what the hell are you talking about, Phil, out loud to no one by myself. But he said something like, those reports are that Isco and Asensio are too close. And it just kind of went undiscussed. And Ray like came back, was like, what were you talking about? And apparently, have you guys heard anything about this? I haven't heard anything about this, but apparently there's some reports that people are worried that Isco and Asensio are getting too close and you know, picking up. Asensio is like, I don't know, he compared them to like Ronaldinho and Messi. I'm pretty lost. So I'm going to hand this off to one of you guys.
So I have not seen anything like that, but I'm just going to guess it has something to do with, like, Isco's decision-making and not releasing the ball quick enough, or, like, that usual narrative that goes on and that Asensio's picking that up. Or maybe it's some lifestyle thing, but whatever it is, like, it's stupid, like, to put it, like, lightly.
I don't know if you have anything, like when I heard it, I just thought it was an unnecessary thing to bring up, which seems silly and just something that'll just spur unnecessary discussion. The only thing I found was a report in Sport, the great Sport, the unbiased and ever
1000% true. Then we need to 1000%
true, and would never ever attempt to disrupt any Real Madrid dressing room stuff. Reported yesterday that there is anger in Real Madrid's dressing room, and Asensio was one of the most annoyed in the entire locker room because of Ronaldo and Zidane and Kovacic leaving. So
that Asensio is angry about it? That's so weird. Whatever.
Well, I did see some stats actually by Vignesh Velu, who's a Real Madrid fan, decent guy on Twitter. He wrote an article about how Real Madrid's attack is going to look like, what is it going to look like without Ronaldo. And essentially, it was what we expected, right? Bale and Benzema's numbers rose when Ronaldo wasn't playing last season. Small sample size alert, though. But something that interesting was Asensio, Lucas Vasquez's numbers, like, they doubled when Ronaldo was on the pitch. So, like, I don't know if that's why Asensio was angry, but there is evidence that shows that Asensio was actually a better player when Ronaldo was on the pitch. So, like, or maybe it was just the fact that, like, Real Madrid just lost two very good players and, like, a great coach, and I'm just reading far too much into it.
That's my feeling, but
this great report from Sport, this is one sentence in it. It says, they have won the last three Champions Leagues and are not happy at predictions that Atletico Madrid might finish above them this season. That's it. That's just, well, that they're angry because some people have predicted Atletico. So this is,
or this could just be all complete, like, just a complete lie, and we're just talking about it, like, for no reason.
It is, like, they're not, like, if anybody thinks that we're serious for 1 second, just to disclaimer, is this is a joke. There's nothing. There's nothing.
Yeah, this is a joke. It's a joke. I mean, Sport. I mean, yeah, I guess we have to explain this, but Sport is a Catalan Barcelona-based newspaper that has a history of just saying absolute bullshit to mess with Real Madrid in the same way that, you know, Marca and AS will occasionally do the same thing with Barcelona. They both of these papers really do have an editorial slant, I think is a very nice way of saying it. And that's exactly what's going on here.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if it was Sport or Mundo Deportivo, which are basically of the same mold, that when we had that very controversial but correct penalty against Juve last season, in the paper the morning after, photoshopped it to make it look...
That was so good, dude. They said the robbery of the century, and they photoshopped it so that Lucas Vasquez did appear to not be touching the guy as he went down.
Yeah,
and they also they're also famous for photoshopping Ronaldo's abs, or maybe that was Chiringuito. I can't remember.
How do you photoshop Ronaldo's abs?
Weird blurring effect. It was like it was honestly disturbing. Like, it just looked like his abs were just out of whack, and like they were weirdly like blurred and like sloshed around. It was
amazing.
It was a disturbing sight.
Anthony Lombardi asks us, take some hot takes of how many goals you think Benz can get this season. Also, can you guys highlight details of why Benzema is doing better without Ronaldo? Like, is it more open space, formation, etc.? I think Benzema can score 20 plus goals this season if he keeps playing like that. I said that. I stand by that. In terms of, I'm interested to know what you guys think about that. I think it's a little bit of a small sample size, though, to talk about whether he's really going to be better without Ronaldo, or what better even means.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for the point to, like, what Benz is going to score in my attackers preview before the season, which you should check out for my reasoning. I outlined it way better there than I'm going to be able to articulate here. As I think 15 to 20 goals is what I think he's going to hit. I think my estimate is more conservative than Keon and Gabe's. And again, like, the reasons are in that article. Like, I can't really explain it better than what I wrote there. And yeah, I agree with Gabe about the sample size issue. And I don't know, man. Like, I don't know if I really buy this idea that Ronaldo, like, held Benzema back. Like, that's such a strong, like, really intensely negative way of portraying their relationship. I mean, the fact is, it's a team game, and relationships, like, on the pitch in football are about give and take, and players who have the best qualities should have that enhanced, and you try to mesh that with someone else who has qualities that, like, either enhances that or serves another part of the game that the other player's qualities don't right. really touch. And all of that was kind of what I saw in Ronaldo and Benzema over the years. And the simple fact of the matter is, Ronaldo is the greatest goal scorer that has ever lived. So I don't know why you'd expect Benzema to be the main guy in Real Madrid who everyone was crossing to or everyone was passing to. It had to be Ronaldo. And to make the team successful, some people had to adjust to that. And in my opinion, it made Benzema a better player. Benzema yep, came here as a pure number nine. And he's ended his, he's come to the end of his career as one of the best all-around forwards of all yep. time. Had he been yep. the main guy, I don't think we would have remembered him that way. So I find it hard to say that he necessarily held him back. I think it's fair to say that Benzema probably would have scored more, but there were other parts of his game that were enhanced by yep. having Ronaldo there.
Totally.
Yeah, 15 to 20 is reasonable to me. I don't think anywhere else I've actually said what I think about what his tally will be anywhere, but this question of why is he better, or is he even better without Ronaldo, was weird to me, and it's kind of unanswerable right now because we've never seen it. But I guess if one thing is that Ronaldo's presence is not something that who was that? Someone in
this
the back.
Logan. That's my Logan. Dog.
I thought it was a baby.
I swear, I thought it was Luca, dude.
I had to look over my shoulder and make sure Luca's in bed.
There's a lot to say.
Yeah. I'm completely lost my train of thought. Yeah, so Benzema, I Ronaldo's presence is not something that caused Benzema to miss really, really clear-cut chances last season, you know? So, like, how do you account for that? And what does that have to do with Ronaldo being on the pitch or not when Benzema really yeah. missed some big sitters last season? Having said that, I think also some of it is just down to Benzema having the realization that he needs to be better. And he was on the record this summer saying, I need to do better this season because I just wasn't that good. So maybe him having a wake-up call on his own is something. But also just the fact that he has to be a nine now. And so he's going to be in goal-scoring positions a lot this season. And being... Because yeah. he wasn't a nine last season. And really, I mean, in theory. But now he will be. So that stuff, I guess, will make a difference for him.
Yeah, totally. All right. Sajid Riaz has some questions about our... has some questions about Real Madrid, or managing Madrid itself, which is fine. Sajid says, what's the setup with respect to us, you know, actually going to the press box and Valdebebas and stuff? Is managing Madrid invited and sponsored as press members to attend certain Real Madrid games, or is it a self-sponsored thing that you guys randomly decide to do? Well, Kian, we are credentialed. We have press credentials to go to Real Madrid games. We don't go to all of them. We don't go to many of them, but we are credentialed. That, I think, I don't know if that's the question. Like, they're not flying us across the country in the ocean to go, you know, watch the team. But so when we go, it's because Kian has made a trip to Madrid to work on his book and cover some games and go to Valdebebas. That's the main reason we go, just because we happen to be there.
I think it's a fair question, because I think a lot of people don't actually understand what our relationship is like with yeah. Vox Media and SB Nation. Like, Vox Media owns, like, the site. Vox Media is a huge, like, journalistic organization. I'm pretty sure you all have heard of it, especially if you live in the United States. And they have given us a level of credibility that allows us to have these press passes to go to boxes and stuff like that. But that's as far as it goes, really. Like, the idea of SB Nation is to be fan run, and, like, we make our decisions, we just decide how things are going to be. Obviously, there's people higher up the chain that direct us here and there, but largely we decide what we're going to do. We're not sponsored by anyone to attend games. We spend our own time. We spend our own money to buy materials, to make these trips, to write articles. Like, that's all us. Like, and
yeah,
most of the time we don't get paid that much really to do it. I think it got better over time. But if you look at some of the smaller blogs, a lot of these guys just do it for free. This is a fan run thing.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Which is why we're doing this podcast. And, you know, in addition to other stuff, that's why we have asked for your help. And to toss us a little bit of money, because that really does help us, spend more time doing this. Tiana, do you have anything to add to that? Or?
Not necessarily, no. I mean, just Real Madrid definitely doesn't have us on a phone tree and says, hey, please come to our game. But we go when we can, and we can go to every practice and game because we are accredited. So, but I mean, I'll be there quite often this season, maybe possibly monthly at least.
Wow.
Yeah, but I guess I'll be there in 3 days, actually. But one thing I am excited about, I guess, is the fact that we'll get to see Vinicius at Castilla, which is a very polarizing subject because a lot of people don't think he should be there. But the good news is that Castilla is going to have some record attendance this season. Just to see him play, and it'll be fun going there. But yeah,
I don't know how to answer Sajid's second question, which is about trying to switch from futsal to 11 aside, other than to say that in futsal there's a way less running. Like, that's a big one.
It's a completely different sport. I don't know where this question came from. It's kind of out of nowhere, but it's a completely different game. So, like, I don't know if you guys grew up playing in North America, but in Canada, essentially, we have two seasons. We have summer season and winter season. And then in the winter, you go from outdoor, from indoor to 7-a-side, 6 in the goalie. And it's really fun, but it's a completely really different sport because
it has walls around it. The ball doesn't go out of bounds and stuff.
Well, there is that version. I played the other version where they actually have lines and stuff and you do throw-ins. But it's a lot of short passes. It's a lot of more technical ability required. And it's shorter halves. So, like, we did 30-minute halves, like hockey subs coming in, like 5 switch changes at a time. So it's, like, it's fun, but it's short. And that's why I hated that part of it. I don't know if there's anything. It's a different sport, Sajid.
It's a different sport.
Yeah,
it's a different
sport. All I'm going to say is I like playing futsal more than actual football.
Yeah, futsal is really fun.
It's really fun. Yeah. That I totally agree with that. Last question is, what happened to all the original MM podcasters? Josh, we get this question occasionally. If you want Josh, we need to. I like Josh is around. He Josh is in med school. He's coming to my wedding. Josh, the original MM podcasters with me and Josh. So I don't know who else you're interested in talking about.
Maybe.
Mike, yeah, I do miss Mike. Mike is wonderful. So Mike and Lucas used to come on a fair amount. He's now brought back on. He's done a couple shows with Keon. The reason that this show's evolved to being the three of us and then Keon doing a lot of really good like other interviews. I really like where we have it now. I don't think there's much.
The answer is like we got stuff going on. I think the answer to the first question like answered it because, like I said, like we're fans who do this on our own time, and at some point like people have to like leave or take like these breaks because they have other stuff to tend to. Like I'm in college now, so I still have like I can still like carve out these portions of free time. But even last season, I had a lot less time. Like as my course has become more difficult, and a lot of people have jobs. They have to make money. They have to eat. So, it's the lineups will probably chop and change over time as it needs to, as people like have their own stuff to do.
Yeah. I don't know if you have anything to add, Keon.
No.
But we are, I mean, yeah, we're fans, but we also are journalists. So don't, like, it's not, this isn't to say that we don't take this
seriously. Well, speak
for
yourself, Gabe. I don't want to, I don't want to be too, I don't want to be too boastful here.
Being a journalist is extremely not boastful. It's literally just talking about what we do. It's like, you don't have to go to school for, like, you don't have to, like, to be a journalist, like, being a journalist is a really hard, tough, important career. There's no licensing board that regulates who the hell gets to call themselves a journalist, though. And, you know, I've always said that what Managing Madrid is a place for people to be journalists and cover the team. And we do this very seriously. This isn't just stuff we kind of shit out or whatever. Like, this is serious stuff that we take very seriously. So,
good point. I'm changing my Twitter bio right now.
Essa Hariri asked, last question. Essa Hariri asked us, hey guys, I know you've been asked about positional play a lot, but can you point out the main differences between that and possession football, like the one played by Guardiola? On the same note, how do you think Lopetegui will play based on your understanding of positional play and managers who use it against coaches that love possession like Pep, or those who love to press like Klopp or Sarri? Will J-Lo willingly lose possession to them?
So I'm guessing this one's for me. Okay, well, I could spend like hours talking about this, but we've already been talking for hours. So let me see how I can answer this quickly. So the main difference is, well, it just suffice to say that Guardiola's interpretation of positional play has changed as he's moved from team to team. And even this season with Manchester City, with Benjamin Mendy coming to side, returning from injury, he's changing his tactics every day. But in a general sense, what he's done with Manchester City and post 13-14 with Bayern is he's played with inverted fullbacks, and he's kept his structure more rigid than he did at Barcelona to be better protected against counterattacks. And he's had his players more in between the lines rather than more fluid and deeper like they were at Barcelona. So that's very, very rough description of what Guardiola does with his positional play.
I think probably important to note, Om, too, also that part of the reason why it has been a little bit different with each team it goes to is because they're accustomed to it differently at each club. So mm-hmm. in Barcelona, like, it was much easier to implement. With Bayern, they had some variation of juego de posición implemented under Van Gaal years prior, so they had a little mm-hmm. bit of it. Where at Manchester City, he was like kind of starting from scratch, trying to.
Yeah, they had none. I mean, that's an excellent point. And people who say like Pep doesn't adapt, he's rigid. I mean, like, his philosophy is the same, but he's very, like, he adjusts a lot. And I think Lopetegui, he to kind of answer that, Lopetegui in a press conference before the game today said that he will adjust his tactics based on the opposition and based on the way his players play. So, I mean, all I can do is look at what he did with Spain and tell you at the moment, like, what's different between him and Guardiola is, I think, Lopetegui is less vertical and his team is more fluid than Guardiola is. So, like we saw versus Getafe, that was very much how Spain played. A lot of side-to-side switching to either flank to progress the ball. And then we all know Isco had an extremely fluid role, you know, in Spain because there were a lot of technical players. But perhaps we get more rigid and structured because Real Madrid's slightly different. I don't know, but I think that's as much as I can say. It's different now. We'll have to wait and see, really. And then how will Lopetegui play against players that have position or like to press? I don't know, honestly. I don't know. Like, Lopetegui said he'll adjust, but I don't know if that means he's going to adjust in giving the ball away or, like, just make slight adjustments, like, with how he positions certain players. Like, I'm going to assume we're always going to try to dominate games. And even against teams that press, we're still going to play out from the back. But, you know, don't hold me to that. We honestly don't know much about how Lopetegui likes to do things with club sides because the last one he managed was Porto, and that was, like, 4 years ago.
I can't picture him deviating from it, to be honest. I can't. Like, with Zidane, like, you could. But with Lopetegui, I really can't, because just from what we know, how he's played with Spain and Real Madrid, the personnel is similar in the sense that it's packed with midfield brainiacs who are essentially equipped to play this kind of scheme where intelligent, technical midfielders who can occupy every zone on the pitch and understand how to switch the play and keep possession and counter press, like it's built for it. So I guess where I would be worried in this scenario is like, and again, this is very early in the season, so we don't know, but Girona pressed us and we were very uncomfortable just facing that high press. You know what I mean? And we saw Jurgen Klopp just absolutely completely unnerve Guardiola's back line in the Champions League. Like they had zero answer for that press. And this is a Guardiola scheme, and like this is what he's known for. Like it's and he really struggled. Second leg he was obviously a lot better, but you know, it's something that I know it's really early in the season and we don't know, but this question from Essa is actually really interesting to me because this is a scenario we're likely going to face at some point, and how we deal with it is an unknown to me, and I'm interested to know how we do deal with it.
All right, that is your show for this week. Keon, do you want to do some patron shout-outs?
Yeah, let's do it. As you all know by now, patreon.com/managingmadrid is where you go to get rewards. You get guaranteed responses to your questions. You get access to bonus shows. You get access to our weekly Loan Tracker podcast where we talk about the Real Madrid's players on loan and Castilla, and also our bonus midweek show, which we're going to break down Champions League games, midweek games, Copa del Rey games. So we're up to 3 to 5 podcasts a week, and only one of them are free. So if you want access, please go to patreon.com/managingmadrid, and you get different rewards. So one of your rewards, if you pledge $10 or more, is you get a specific shout out on the podcast. Shout out to Sergio Monleon, Tyler Dixon, Raul Gutierrez, Gary Kohut, Nick DeStefane, Raghav Potluri, Bjorn Salvador, Dan Berthy, John Fernandez, Frederick Sundros, Selvin Adolfo Chamali Perez, Anas Alazawi, Sheikh Atiri, Red Bat, Leon Stavranakis, Armin Gashi, Eric Rogers, Nick Ribeiro, Yahya Ibrahim, Said Mahad, Vicky Cohen, Magnus Lext, Jason Fitz, Anton Hackberg, Solomon Ortiz, Jeanette, Jimmy Obeid, and Daniel Smith.
And shout out, I heard Vicky Cowan. Shout out, Vicky. Vicky, we will bring you back on the show soon. We'll yes. That back. Welcome back to the country. All right, everybody. Thanks. We will be back. Do you guys have anything to plug this upcoming week?
Probably, but just
follow the site.
Go to managingmadrid.com because there's a lot of content right now.
I have an article coming out, I think, tomorrow about a very cool best player ever from previous generation, and I'm not going to tell you who that is.
Nice. Obviously, Lucas Vazquez. I probably am going to do like a tactical video, or like I don't know if I can say tactical video, but like an analysis like on a player's performance from the Girona game. Like, I'm not sure who it's going to be yet, but it's probably going to be Gareth Bale, since he was probably the most impressive player. Don't know when that's going to come out. Hopefully like tomorrow or the day after, so stay tuned for that, I guess.
Awesome. All right, guys. Until next week, a la Madrid.
A la Madrid.
A la Madrid.